I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Irish Country Living Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to the Irish Country Living Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Donahue. This week's guest is Claire Hunter, a businesswoman from Northern Ireland. Claire is really, really interesting, so this week's podcast is a little bit longer than normal, but that's okay, because she's got a lot to say, she's done a lot, and she's great crack while she's saying it. So it's definitely worth sticking with it. As I was saying, Claire grew up in Belfast, and when she met her husband Brian, she moved to farm with him in Armoy. It's about an hour away from the city. After some persuasion, I won't ruin all the stories, but she took a little bit of persuading being a city girl to move out to the country. But where they live is actually right beside the dark hedges that was used for the Game of Thrones set. So a really, really cool place. As I was saying, Claire is a businesswoman. After she did her GCSEs, she went to catering college. Then she went into more of a sales kind of role after that. She was the sales rep for British Water Fillers. She still sells toaster bags, the toaster sandwiches that you put into the bag in the actual toaster. She co-owns the Marine Hotel in Ballycastle with her friend Colm. And they also have another gluten-free business, Rule of Crumb. And they were on Dragon's Den with that. So I'm not going to spoil the whole thing. Claire has loads of interesting stories around all of those different topics. So enjoy the podcast. So Claire, how are you keeping today?
Very well, thank you. Very well. The boys are out. I'm watching. We're actually just building a new silo up at our farm at the moment. So they're pouring concrete today.
Very good. So look, busy right across the board.
Yeah. So it's busy right across the board. The hotel reopened on Friday after being closed since Boxing Day. And in between, we used the time to do some refurbishments. We think that the COVID status, even when we do get reopened, we think that the COVID status will still be socially distancing. You know, we think that we will have to socially distance our guests and do table service rather than people crowding together at a bar. We think there will still be limits to how many people you can have seated at one table. So we decided to act sooner rather than later. So we've remodeled the ground floor of the hotel so that we can actually fit in 29 more seats.
Fantastic, that's excellent.
So we've done that so that we can safely serve the customers whenever we do finally get open. But in the north, it's slightly different from the south in that, we don't even have a date yet for reopening for bedrooms. We're allowed to do takeout, and we reopen for takeout on Friday, but we've no idea when the rooms will reopen. They just won't give us a date.
So you haven't gotten that part of the plan just yet.
No.
Well, we haven't down here either. So at least we're all in the same boat, Claire.
Yeah, I know. It's very hard to plan.
Yes. Yeah. As a business person, Claire, not to be going into the negative now too soon, but while we're talking about it, has it been an extremely difficult year?
Yeah,
with being a hotelier in the past 12 to 13 months?
Yes, it certainly has. And in particular, because we were only getting on our feet. So Colm and I bought the hotel in 2013. And at the time, the previous owner had failed with the hotel, so none of the banks would lend. So that meant that we weren't able to renovate as we wanted to when we first bought the hotel. It was taken the 7 years, let's say, to get the hotel to where we wanted physically. And so we do have bank borrowings and things now. So for this to happen, for the pandemic to hit in the very first year when we were going really well and all the rooms refurbished and added 10 bedrooms and refurbished the ballroom, I mean, it's awful. But at the same time, we just have to go with it. But yes, it has affected business very badly.
And will you be opening back up again, Claire?
Oh, yes, no question. The second we get given the nod, we will be reopening full swing, the bistro, well, the weddings, you see, the weddings would be a large part of our trade, and we really don't know where we're going to be with that, because we don't know how many people we'll be allowed to have in a ballroom, you know, whether they will limit it to 50, and then, of course, all the poor brides around the country, and that would be the same. Down south, all the brides don't know whether they're coming or going. Will we just get married and to heck with it, or will we hold out so we can have the party that we want to, or will we rush off the registry office and just do it?
Yeah, I think people are quite confused right across the board. It's hard to know what to do with your different plans. Plans are too hard to make. And then you see
you get put into a position where you have brides booked for 2020, rebooked for 2021, and then that kind of fills most of your summer dates for 2021, and then those guys, and then you've already got, because we'd only redone our ballroom, 2022 is already full, because of the way people pre-book their wedding date.
Yeah.
And as a result, we don't have the prime date to move the people who've moved from 2020 into 2021. We don't have the dates for 2022, so they're having to change from a summer wedding to a spring wedding or to an autumn wedding in order to sort of get married in 2022. So it's all really confusing.
Yeah, the confusing is a good word for it all. And Claire, you yourself, did you grow up in Belfast?
I grew up in Belfast, yes. So I went to, my dad's an optometrist from Belfast and my mum was a solicitor in Belfast, and we grew up it's just outside the city centre in a wee place called Dunmurray. Mm. And then I went to school there and everything. But I sort of took a different route. I wasn't very well when I was 16. I had mental health issues.
Did you care?
So I didn't actually, and I'm not ashamed of it, I actually go out and do talks in school. I actually have gone into a few schools and talked to teenage girls about how growing up isn't always easy, and it doesn't always have to be something physical that, you know, it doesn't have to be a tangible thing to affect them. It should just be your hormones or whatever growing up. But whenever I was 16, I went through a very bad, very serious period of depression, and I was actually in a hospital for 10 weeks with it. And but what that did teach me, I got better again. That's the very first thing that people learn, is once you get better, once you know that you can get better again. But the reason I told you that was because that kind of pictured my, you know, I come from a family of lawyers and doctors and sort of business people, but I was more practical,
yeah,
as opposed to academic. So I went to catering college when I was 16. So after my bout in hospital and so on, I went to catering college when I was 16 and did the equivalent of A-levels or leaving at catering college. And then I went on to do the degree in hotel management after that. So I kind of just took a different route to career, if you like.
And at the time, Claire, did that bother you that you were taking that different route, or were you happy enough with it?
No, I was always happy enough with it. So long, my mum and dad were always brilliant. Just so long as you're happy and healthy, that's the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not all about achievements and it's not all about money. It's about happiness and, you know, whatever you feel comfortable doing. And Catering College was brilliant, and that's where I met my business partner in the hotel and Rule of Crumb, Colin McLaurin, and I met each other the first week of Catering College when we were 16, and we've remained very good friends since. And he and I bought the hotel together, and he's the brains behind Rule of Crumb, but then I give him a hand with it.
And after, when you finished Catering College, where did you go after? Did you go out working, Claire?
I went to Dundee to do the degree in hotel and catering management, and that was brilliant, actually, because I went and worked in, there's a big golf resort called Glen Eagles that some of you and some of your readers might have heard of, and at the time it was owned by Guinness or Diageo, and this is I'm 46 now, so this isn't today or yesterday. But they had a sister who, so I went and worked in Glen Eagles. You have to do some sort of business management project in your second year of college. And I happened to get one of the highest scores, so I got to go and work in Glen Eagles for the summer. And then Glen Eagles asked you to do a management report. I think the project was on empowerment of your staff or something like that. And when you were at Glen Eagles, and then if you scored highly enough in it, you got to go and do your 9-month placement at their sister property in Vermont.
Ooh, lovely.
In the USA. And that was an absolutely bad. So anyway, I must have nailed it as well, because I did get to go to Vermont and live for 9 months in Vermont.
Oh, fantastic.
And I worked as a waitress in a hotel. I worked in room service in Glen Eagles, which was great. And the year before that, actually, for a placement, so my hotel career actually started as a chambermaid. So the first year of Catering College, I went over to Edinburgh, and Colm and I and some other girls lived in a caravan outside Edinburgh city centre. And I worked as a chambermaid, and Colin worked as a house porter. And he used to bring the sheets, and I used to go and make the rooms up in the Caledonian Hotel in Edinburgh. So that was many moons ago, but that was the start of our hotel career together, if you like. So that was 30 years ago.
So you've done it all, Claire, to be fair, and you.
Yeah. I'm still, actually, you'll still find me out working. So it's not that we're still fairly hands-on in the hotel now, because Colin works behind the Costa coffee counter during the summertime to make sure we get every upsell that we can, and I would serve the picnic tables outside because everybody's wanting to sit outside now. And sometimes it's hard to empower your staff to show how much extra money can be made just by talking to your guests and by making sure that they have everything that they need. You know, you don't walk past a half full pint of Guinness ever. You know, you ask the person, would they like another one?
Well, that sounds like a great motto to me, Claire, to be fair.
Yeah, well, that on every basis, never walk past on both sales and on a personal level, maybe never walk past a half full pint of Guinness.
Yeah, no, it's a good motto to have. And Claire, was it always a goal for yourself and Colm to own your own hotel? Was it something you had in the pipeline for quite a while?
God, no. It kind of was an opportunity that presented itself. So back in 2003, I used to be the rep for Brita Water Filters in the northern 10 counties of Ireland. So I sort of left hotel management. I was a manager of a restaurant for maybe 6 months or a year after I finished my degree. And then I got this job as a sales rep for Brita Water Filters. And I stayed with them for, I think, nearly about 5 years. And I used to sell the Brita, you know, the jug water filters. So I used to sell them into supermarkets and hardware stores and cookware stores and department stores and chemists. And then one day in 2003, I was at a show in England, and somebody brought me a piece of toastie, and I was like, oh my goodness, that's lovely. And I went to see these toasties being made, and the demonstrator was putting a cheese sandwich into, untoasted, just 2 bits of white bread and cheese in between, into this black Teflon bag, and then putting the whole thing into the toaster and toasting it, and it toasted the sandwich through the bag. And the bags are reusable. And I looked at this and I just thought, oh my goodness, this is the coolest idea I have ever seen in my life. And every home in Ireland has a toaster, and I'm ready for a new challenge. So I spoke to the inventor who was there that day, and then I brought home a couple of toasty bags, and my mum and dad and Brian, my now husband, and myself, we all huddled around the toaster, and I showed them the toasty coming out of the toaster, and we were all blown away. And I told my mum and dad that I was going to pack in my job and sell these for a living. And them both being very positive people said, yeah, cool, no problem. So I did, and in the early years of toasty bags, I had them in Dunnes, and I had them in all the Super Values, and this is North and South. All the Dunnes, all the Super Values, all the hardware stores, Budget DIYs, Harvey Normans. I had a great business going. And then we went from Dragon's Den. Well, it was actually the inventor went from Dragon's Den, and we got backing from James Cam, the Indian guy with beard that used to do it way back. This is going back more than 10 years. And he said that the black toast bags are too good. They last too long. So now in 2021 in Ireland, you will see every Tesco, every Dunnes, every Super Value with papery toaster bags that will do about 50 goes and then fall apart.
Yeah.
So I don't do that part anymore. So whenever the papery ones came in, I just thought, well, I was starting to have babies as well at the time, so I couldn't get out around all the stores. So I still do all of the exhibitions with the toaster bag. So the business just changed, and I had to adapt with the business because I was having my third child at that point, and I just thought, right, I need a little bit more time at home. So the distributors came and handled the shops, and they did the papery toaster bags, but I started to do a lot more of the exhibitions.
Yeah.
Now I would go to things like the Ideal Home Exhibition, the Love Your Home Exhibition, the Dublin Horse Show, the Plowing Championship, the Puck Fair, the Bano and Rathangan. I would go to the Tina Healy Show. You know,
you're all over the place, Claire.
All over the place, and it really, and I sleep in the back of the van, so it's as far away from owning a hotel as you could possibly get.
Do you? You sleep in the back of the van?
Yeah. So, I would go off to these fairs, and I have the wee camp bed from the hotel in the back of the van, and I just get up and sell my wares and go to sleep, and then drive home again the following day. So, in 2013, so I was still selling the toasty bag, but Colin and I have been friends for a long time. He is godfather to one of our children. The hotel in Ballycastle was derelict and had been derelict for about 3 years, or maybe 3.5 years. And we used to take the children for ice cream down at the seafront and say, God, I wish somebody would do something with that place, because it's an amazing building. It's one of the best locations anywhere on the Causeway Coast. You know, the tourism industry, Northern Ireland and the Causeway Coast, is now an extension of the Wild Atlantic Way. You know, we're seeing millions of travellers. I think back at that stage, the giant Causeway itself had almost a million visitors in sort of 2013. And we thought, gosh, you know, we really need to sort of tap into this. And we started to look at it seriously and think, will we buy it? And then, of course, we both laughed and thought that was a silly idea. And then we looked into it a bit further and ended up buying it. And because it had been closed for so long, it was quite run down, and the inside of it was very old fashioned. You know, it had the units between the beds which had the radio in them. You're probably even too young to remember those, Anne.
No, I don't remember them actually.
In the really old fashioned hotels, they had the headboards were linked with this little bedside table, and there would be a wee radio in the bedside table, and there were all this sort of plasticky Formica drawers and wardrobes and everything. It was disgusting. But anyway, we couldn't get money from the bank because it had failed previously, so we borrowed money from tenants, the brewery, and a little bit of money. We basically bought the place for cash and then borrowed a bit of money to get it reopened, and we bought it on the 13th of March 2013, and we reopened on the 14th of June. So it was a 3-month turnaround from a derelict building into an operational 28-bedroom hotel. So that was
That's so quick turnaround.
And the very first day that we opened, it still makes me feel sick 8 years, 8 years on. We decided in a moment of madness to open on Father's Day. Mm-hmm. We had 320 people booked in for a carvery on our opening day. That was a really silly idea. We were very naive. We didn't realise that we were going to have teething problems. And just as the guests were starting to arrive, the electricity went off.
In the whole hotel?
In the back part of the hotel where the ballroom and the kitchens are.
Yeah.
So we're feeding all these people in the ballroom. And the electricity goes off. And when the electricity goes off, the gas shuts off, which means the chef can't continue to cook.
Oh, wow.
And we've got 300 people arriving, and they're all coming in dribs and drabs, and I'm feeling sick, going, what am I going to tell these people? And I'm saying, just come into the bar, and we'll get you a drink. This is the first time we've ever done this. Please bear with us. We'll maybe rub you running 10 or 15 minutes behind. Meanwhile, I was with the electrician saying, and he's in Ballymena, which is about 20 minutes away, saying, please, Ashley, you've got to come quick. This is awful. It's a disaster. And we've got 100 people in the building, and I can't feed any of them. But in the end, Ashley came from Ballymena. He fixed whatever he had to fix. They were able to get the cooking finished, and we were about 20 minutes late starting to feed everybody.
But not the worst. That's not as bad as it could have been. You saved it.
Yes, we saved it. But the thing was, if you put it in perspective, Anne, you've got this little County Antrim town where people are a bit narrow-minded and they're wondering who the heck these two idiots are that have bought the hotel in the first place, because we don't have hotel history. You know, it's not like Marriott have come in and bought the local hotel. It's these two blow-ins. And it's not even as if I'm from Armoy. You know, I'm married into Armoy, so it's not like my family have any reputation in the area.
And anyway, so
we really could have done, if it hadn't worked out that way, we could have done ourselves a lot of damage. But thankfully, we talked ourselves out of a situation. And since then, we have renovated all 28 bedrooms that we had then. We've added another 13 bedrooms, so we've got 41 bedrooms. We have renovated the ballroom. We can seat up to about 320 people in the ballroom. And then we've built a new kitchen. We've completely renovated the hotel. And then just in lockdown, between Christmas and now, we have remodeled the ground floor in order to be more COVID-friendly and more attractive and comfy for guests coming in.
Fantastic. And Claire, did I read somewhere, or did Marie tell me that that you had to remortgage houses to pay staff at one stage?
Yes. So the summertime, if you can imagine, where are you from originally? Are you from the country or are you from the city?
No, the country. I live countryside Limerick.
Yeah, so in a seaside town, the winter is very, very quiet. But the summer is absolutely booming. So if you imagine like Bunratty Castle or somewhere like that, you know,
yeah,
it's booming during the summer and then it goes dead for the winter. So Ballycastle's a wee bit like that. But you still have your 30 staff on your books, and you still have to pay their wages and keep them in a job over the winter time. So even though there's no customers, you have to budget to make sure that you can still pay the wages throughout the winter. And there were actually two winters where we had to borrow money from elsewhere to finance the business to get us through the winter. So it was really, you know, it was hampered out for quite a long time. This is actually really our first good year.
And
so yeah, there were different. Toastbags had to lend the business money, and Brian and I had to lend the business money, and Colin's business had to lend the business. Yeah, so just we had to rob Peter to pay Paul to get through a couple of winters.
But you got through them anyway.
Yeah, we finally come out the other side too.
And Claire, you sound like you kind of take challenges in your stride, do you?
Yeah, I think I probably do. I think I'm pretty basic in things. You know, I mean, you buy things for one price and you sell them on at a higher price and you make a profit at it. And you do good and you look look after people along the way. So it's really very basic. I'm not a high flyer. I'm not a property tycoon. I'm not an academic. It's very, very basic. You look after people. You make people want to come back. And you serve them to the very best of your ability. And you look after the staff within your property the way that you would like to be looked after. And you show all of your people that there's nothing, you know, I mean, I've been there with an AI glove with my hand down a drain at the hotel many times.
Yeah.
You know, you make sure that your people know that there's no job in the hotel that you haven't done.
Yeah, it's a good way of going about things. And when did you and Colm go on Rule of Crumb? Or how did Rule of Crumb come about?
So Rule of Crumb started probably late 2014. We realised that it was actually when we started the hotel. We realised that nobody was satisfying the hospitality trade need for gluten free products. We found that in the hotel we were buying a loaf of gluten-free bread, which has maybe 12 or 13 slices, and you have one gluten-free guest in a week, and they maybe use two slices, which means that the rest of the whole loaf is going in the bin. So we thought about that, and then we thought, you've got fryers in kitchens, and you have to use a separate fryer. You have to invest in and use a separate fryer if you want to do gluten-free fried things. We started just to think about, wouldn't it be more cost effective if you could have individually portioned, wrapped, gluten-free products in a branding that people learn to trust? So there's something about people who are celiac, traditionally hospitality has not always taken a celiac dietary requirement seriously enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that a celiac, you know, I think sometimes celiac people don't trust what's put on their plate because it's not advertised enough that the establishment is taking it seriously. So what we did, the first product we started off with were, we went out and we did surveys to find out what do gluten-free people really like to eat that they can't or that they traditionally don't. And believe it or not, there were things like chicken goujon, that, you know, like rolls, bread rolls.
Yeah.
Fish fingers, fillets of fish, scones, chocolate eclairs and profiteroles. You know, and these were all things that you never would even, you know, if you're not a celiac, and I'm not a celiac, but and Colin's not a celiac. It was just through friends, family and our experience in the hotel and doing surveys that we found out what they wanted. And then as we started to think a bit more, we thought about prisons and schools and hospitals all over the country, places like ski chalets that are only catering for small numbers of people each week. All of these places now are duty bound to cater for dietary requirements, and they're not, or they're not doing it very well. So we now have a business. We offer 21 different products. Most of them are individually wrapped. They are bakeable instead of fried, instead of having to be fried. You know, things like chicken goujon, fish fingers, chicken kiev, fillets of fish. We've got breaded and battered fillets of fish. All of those things can be cooked, baked, rather than fried. So, you know, you're not requiring a hotel or a restaurant to buy a separate fryer for things.
Yeah.
And the packaging that they come in, it is very clearly marked the process. You know, you take it out, you put it on a clean baking tray, you put it in the oven at 180 degrees, you wash your hands before and after use. So it helps the establishment out with their processes and their standard operating procedures as well. So in 2015, I think it was, in 2014 and 15, we won lots of good food awards and lots of best new products. Things like gluten-free cornflakes, gluten-free cocoa pops, you know, random things you don't really think about. Instead of, quite often if you go into a hotel, there are big boxes of gluten-free cornflakes, but that can be cross-contaminated because you could get a child putting their hands into the Rice Krispies and then, or into something else and then into the gluten-free cornflakes, then you wouldn't know that your food had not been contaminated.
Yeah.
So we do individually portioned packs of four different types of breakfast cereals. Yeah, so we went on Dragon's Den and got cruelly thrown out in 2015. Debra Maiden really liked our idea. And we did a great pitch. Well, we thought we did a great pitch. Peter Jones went to sleep. He declared himself out. He said he didn't believe in the whole gluten-free thing, and he went to sleep in the corner. and then Nick from Moonpig, I can't remember. You can imagine what I call him after he told us our bread rolls. He said our bread rolls were absolutely rank, which they aren't. And he threw it, and there was an image on the actual show where they used us as an advertisement of him going, "That is rank," and just throwing our bread rolls at the side.
Oh my God.
I know, it was awful. But what he didn't know was the producers had made us cook off the bread rolls at 7:30 in the morning, and we weren't actually on the thing until 2:00 in the afternoon. So obviously they're not going to be tasting great after sitting for 6 hours.
Yeah.
But the way it all ended up was Theo Casita told us that he felt that we had our fingers in too many pies. Well, these are my words, not his. He didn't see how we would be capable of running 2 or 3 different businesses effectively. And actually, we got into a bit of an argument with him because we said we were able to say that, you know, with computers and with logistics and with Wi-Fi, if you're in touch with all of the world all the time, you know, so I can be with my children in my kitchen, but I will still have access to all of my correspondence. And then Colm also runs a travel business, so basically, Theo Casita said. So you're telling me, and he wouldn't let us speak, you're telling me you're going to be lying on a beach somewhere, and what happens when a lorry load of chicken falls off on the M5? And Colin just said, well, actually, Theo, if I'm sitting in my house in Antrim or in an office in London, with all respect to the world, it's not going to be me. It'll be me who organises to sort out the lorry load of chicken, but it's not going to be me with my forklift lifting it off the road.
And that's a very fair point.
Yeah, you know, you're capable of organising things. The reason that you are capable of running 2 or 3 different businesses is because you look after your people, like you delegate.
Yeah.
So anyway, he didn't like that. He huffed and puffed and threw his toys out of the pram, and that was that. And then, so the only two left, there was another one, but I can't remember. No, that's it. And then the only two left are Sarah Willingham, who ran the Bombay Bicycle Club, which is a chain of restaurants in London, and Debra Maiden, who's the one that everybody knows. So Debra Maiden came in after Theo, and this, I think this is probably a bit boring for you, but cut out any bit. Debra said, contrary to what Theo thinks, I quite like you. In fact, I really like you, and I don't see any problem with the fact that you have a couple of businesses each. And I really like this idea, and I can see how it solves an awful lot of problems. And the fact that you have other businesses each just proves to me that you're capable people. And so that was fine. So she said, I'll offer you all of the money for, and I can remember, Anne, what it was, whether it was 20% or it was a higher percentage than we had offered anyway. That was fine. We said, thank you very much for your offer, Debra. And then there was a big, long silence. And Sarah Willingham was the only person that hadn't spoken. So she spoke and she said, oh, I'm finding it really hard because I'm a foodie at heart. And, you know, I'm into artisan products. And this is, it's a bit mass produced, but I can see how it solves so many problems for so many people within the catering industry, and it offers a trustable solution for the celiac, and I'm really torn. And then there was this big silence, and we're standing there in front of the cameras, and we've been in there for about 2 hours at this stage. And we stood, and I was wearing my sister-in-law's shoes, and my feet were killing me.
I know the feeling.
And the lights make you so hot. particularly, you know, when you're up in the lights, we were so warm and we were looking at her. And I just thought, I'm going to ask, will they go together?
And did you?
I couldn't. Yeah, I did. And so I said, do you, and she kept silent, you see, because, and it felt like it was about 2 minutes of silence, but it was probably only about 1 minute. But it was long enough whenever you're standing there sweating your heart out, wondering what they're going to say. So anyway, I said, ladies, do you think there would be any possibility of sharing this deal in some way? The way I would see it working would be that we would get the investment that we need, but your risk would be halved, but we would get double the education and the marketing help.
Yeah.
Quite often in Dragon's Den, you see the people going together and going halfers. Well, actually, whatever I said really offended Deborah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And she said, well, no, I'm a big not. And then she started to shake her head. And I thought, oh, God, I've breathed this for us. And she shook her head and she said, no, absolutely not. It's quite clear to me now that you don't have the same commitment to me as I would have had to you. We were asking for another dragon to come in with us. I said, well, actually, I'm really sorry. That is not what I meant at all. What I meant was that there would be your risk would be half. And she didn't listen to me. She kind of cut me off then. And then I started to cry because I was like, I've let my best friend die. And anyway, Sarah then declared herself out. So I hadn't really started to cry. I think I was just shaking at that point. And then Sarah declared herself out. And then we got back in the lift. And then there's a clip that they still use of me taking a sip of water after we get out of the lift. And I said, oh, God, I'm so sorry. My friend called. And so anyway, we left again with nothing. But there was a brilliant social media kind of backlash. And the support for the underdog was tremendous, and everybody went out and bought Rule of Crumb products because they felt that we had been badly treated in the den.
Okay, well, just kind of with that in mind, was it a bad experience overall, or in the end, was it an okay experience?
No, it was a good experience, because it pushed us both out of our comfort zones, and it was something completely new. And it was an exciting thing to get your teeth into. And something like that makes you analyze your own business and think, you know, something like that thinks some. So obviously the dinosaurs, I was going to say, the dragons are going to try and dissect whatever you say to them. So it's a very good exercise for you to go and dissect your own business before you take it to the dragons, because, you know, you can see where you need help, where you're achieving, where you're not achieving, where your cost price is too high, where you need to move the market. Like, you know, it allows you to have a really good hard look at doing business.
Yeah. And it was
good fun. You know, I mean, it was Colm and I would take the odd punt at things, you know, like the hotel and like Rule of Crumb. And, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of in being an entrepreneur. There's nothing, and I don't mean that I'm an entrepreneur, but I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of in trying something new. If it doesn't work out, you get up and you brush yourself off and you move on.
And has that always been kind of something you've lived by, Claire, that you take a punt on something and failure's not the be-all and end-all, kind of?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've had my fair share of, I've had a couple of other things that I've done. The inventor who invented the toasty bags has come out with other inventions during the year, some of which sell very well and some of which don't. So he invented, and I don't want to flag off the product, but it just didn't sell well for me, a wheelbarrow water carrier. And so it was for areas that you couldn't get a hose to. And it was a bag that went in the wheelbarrow, and it had a nozzle that you filled from a tap, and then you could wheel your water down to the tree at the bottom of the garden if you needed a drink. So I spent $2,000 one year on a stand at Bloom Festival, you know, Bloom in the Park.
Yeah.
And I had to hire a bit. They were physically bigger than, you know, they were the size of a wheelbarrow water carrier was physically obviously bigger than a toasty bag. Toasty bags, you know, you have to get a box of 500 of them, you can bring them in the back of the van. But I had to hire a van. and I was 14 weeks pregnant, so I was having the morning sickness at the time, and away I went off to Bloom in the Park, and it was a disaster. I had to come home with all my food about water carriers. Thankfully, I was selling toast bags on the side, and they paid for everything and had a good income. The wheelbarrow water carriers didn't do so well at all.
That
was a bit of a flummox. And then the other thing that I'm now thinking of starting up again is AGA cookery classes. I actually took an ad with you many years ago. I did them from probably about 2006 to about 2010. And they went, I held them here at the house, and lots of people inherit an AGA and they don't know how to use them, or lots of people buy them because they think, oh, that, you know, it's almost like a status symbol, but they don't know how to use them. So I have grown up with an AGA. I can obviously talk. I can cook. I have a degree in cooking. So I thought, well, I'll try my hand at doing AGA cookery classes. So I would take 10 or 12 people at a time, and we would cook a number of dishes. I'd written a cookery manual. I mean, it's not like it's been published or anything, but it's just a manual that I have in Word document that I put in folders for people who come to the class. And then they come to the class, and we have a lovely day, and people make new friends, and we talk about all the different ways to cook on an AGA, and we talk about what has to go into what oven, and what results you'll get whenever you do this, and how to plan a dinner party without having to spend your time in the kitchen. And we have a laugh, and we make wheaten bread, and we use toasty bags, and we use a super duper frying pan that I get at the shows, and I sell all these things to my lovely ladies that come to the AGA cookery classes. And the only reason the demand for those was brilliant, and the money was great, and people loved coming to the country, because quite a lot of the people that came would have been, city slickers. And they would have been, we're only an hour outside Belfast, so it was a day out. There was one day we had two Porsches and a helicopter in the yard with people coming to the cookery classes.
Oh, wow.
I know, that was great fun. And the only reason I thought is because having children and the house was a bit untidy, and we were buying the hotel, and I was busy with toasty bags, so I kind of stopped them for a few years, and I would like to start them again now that the children are up a bit. But we'll see.
Yeah, surely it might be something to get back into. And Claire, tell me a bit about moving from the city to the countryside. How was that for you? When did you meet your husband, first of all? Do you mind me asking?
So I met Brian in 1997, I think, in the Bot in Belfast. And it was quite funny because I must have been going through a phase of boys don't phone. You know, they always give them your number and they never phone.
Yeah.
And anyway, he asked me for my number and I wouldn't give it to him. I told him my dad was an optician in Belfast and he could go and look it up in the Yellow Pages. So he did. He looked up optometrist in Belfast in the Yellow Pages, and he phoned one evening and didn't leave his name, but I knew who it was. And so I looked up the Yellow Pages and I looked up farmers in Ballycastle or farmers in Armoy. And I rang and I got his aunt's place. And so by the time the aunt had given, and this was before mobile phones or anything, and this is, you know, whenever you're sitting with the wired phone in your lap.
Love it.
Waiting for somebody to call. You know, it was like you could just sort of text and say, it was really nice to meet you last night. Do you want to go for a date?
Yeah.
I phoned him, his aunt. By the time I phoned his house, the aunt gave me his phone number, and I phoned his house, the line was red hot with the aunt ringing his mum to say, there's a girl from Belfast trying to find Brian. So we went out then, and then we got married the transition to the country was really hard. And the reason that we went out with each other for so long was because I didn't think I could ever do it. I didn't think I could ever come second to 200 cows.
Yeah.
That just wasn't me. You know, I was used to going and seeing my friends and getting a taxi into the city centre to go for an afternoon shopping, or getting the bus, or, you know, city things. And in the end, actually, I think I 2002 and said, look, I don't see where this is going. And then I went back 2 weeks later and said, the only reason I was dumping him, I was mad about him, I was madly in love with him, but I couldn't live in the country.
Yeah.
It was going to be too hard to live in the country. And then, obviously, 2 weeks later, I went calling back and said, sorry, I've made a mistake, I really love you. And then he proposed within 3 months. So that was that. And then moved up to here and we built a house. We lived in a caravan, actually, for nearly 2 years. Which was good fun. It was good fun. And with no electricity. So when we came back from honeymoon, I had all my hair chopped off because with no electricity and I couldn't go to work without a hairdryer. so I had my hair all chopped off really short. And one of the bedrooms in the caravan was my toast bag loft. And it was a really good time. And then we built a house here, and we built the house big enough that we took with 5 bedrooms so that my family could come up frequently and stay.
Yeah.
And they still do, thankfully. And I couldn't be happier. And Brian always told me that I used to think, well, I don't want to come second to 200 cows, and I'm never going to see you, and you're never going to get a weekend off, and being married to a dairy farm is really hard, you're just going to be working all the time, and I'll just be at home with children all the time, it'll be awful. And then he said, but you'll see, Claire, I'll actually be around more. I don't think you understand, but I would actually be around more. Mm. And I never did understand, but I couldn't think of any alternative. So I married him anyway, and he was right, and I was wrong. He is around more, and he is a wonderful father, and he sees a lot more of his children than many other fathers that I know, because he is around the farm.
And do the kids like growing up on the farm, Claire?
Yeah. So Amy is 15, and Tom and Emily are, Tom is 11 and Emily's 10, and they feed the calves every morning and evening. And Louisa is 6, and she does nothing. She is absolutely a spoiled little madam who just hugs me the whole time, which keeps me very happy. but they love it. They love the farm. And we're actually where we're located. We're right beside. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Dark Hedges.
The Game of Thrones kind of set.
So that borders our land.
Oh, fantastic!
So that borders our land, and so that's actually where I run every morning. Run through walk. It's walking more than running these days. And the children, from time to time, we make things out of the old. So the trees, they're bits and pieces of trees fall, and we kind of own the trees because they're on our land. So when a tree falls, obviously we're on a farm, so one of the trees that fell on the other side was actually sold to Tourism NI, and they made it into doors to promote Game of Thrones around different locations. But any of the smaller step branches, we cut them and we put a hole in them, and the children design them with as Christmas decorations, and they put ribbons on them. So then we go and we sell them at the Dark Hedges. So this is my idea, to try and get the children into commerce and interested in their location and realise that they live somewhere very special. So a couple of times we've gone and we've sold pancakes. I would get my toasty bag generator out and we would go and set up a table on one of our farm gateways on the Dark Hedges, and we would sell pancakes to the tourists, and which is brilliant for the children because they're seeing money coming in and they're getting to talk to people from all sorts of different walks of life. And then they sell the re-Christmas decorations as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. They're getting it.
Yeah.
It must be a great, geez, it must be a very interesting place for them to grow up, though.
I don't know that they always think so. I think they're certainly not of the age that they realise that their parents are sort of in any way different. You know, that all these random ideas that mum and dad have are different. That's just the way it is. I mean, during the lockdown, the first lockdown, we didn't want people to forget the hotel.
Yeah.
So Colm, my business partner, and myself, we opened the Costa Coffee Shop Hatch every Saturday from 12 to 3 and every Sunday from 12 to 3 to offer free tea and coffee and buns to NHS workers.
Oh, that's lovely.
If they, you know, to any NHS workers or any frontline workers, to get a free cup of coffee. And then obviously we sold our cakes and buns to anybody else that was out for their essential walk. But I got Emily and Tom to help me with the baking. So they knew that they were baking for, but the idea was that they knew that they were baking for a good cause.
Yeah.
And then they would come into the hotel and masked up, we would sell our, you know, and give away our coffee and buns. And then that also kept the interest in the hotel going. So it's all a bit of a two-pronged approach to try and keep people feeling well about the Marine Hotel in Ballycastle and thinking and knowing that we want to do well by the local community.
Yeah. So you're in Armoy and the hotels in Ballycastle, are they quite close to each other, Claire?
Just 5 miles.
Yeah.
5 miles. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I hope things work sooner rather than later. You get open and that you have you seem set for a good season anyway, Claire. Hopefully, and you have all the bits in place.
I actually think, Anne, it will be a bumper season. For many reasons. One is just vacationing. I think that people will be staying in the country to holiday this year. And the popularity of the Causeway Coast is growing every year anyway, but also the spend. Not everybody would agree with me, but the spend from Irish and UK visitors would tend to be higher in ways than Americans and Australians, and part of that is because they would have a second pint of Guinness,
mm-hmm.
or a third pint of Guinness. Whereas the Australians, the Americans, and the Germans are all quite restrained.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody sort of who's staying for 2 or 3 days, then the average spend of locals would be higher.
And that's actually a very good point. Like, we do like our food and our drink, you know, and we'll eat and drink plenty of it when we go somewhere. To be fair.
Yeah, and the value in the north of Ireland is very good at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, the value for people coming from the south north is really very good at the minute.
Yeah.
And we'll be sure to welcome them. Oh. If you don't, in the Ballycastle in the hotel, you'll see me in the dark hedges selling pancakes.
you're everywhere, Claire, to be fair, and you.
I know. Well, hopefully now the flying championships will go ahead. It's scheduled for September as normal. And actually, it's going to be a killer of a week because Balmoral Show is a big agricultural show in the north. And it has been delayed. It has been postponed from May to September.
Oh, wow. So, this is a big one for shows.
Oh, God, it's going to be a killer. So it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the plowing. And then the Friday, Saturday, Sunday or something is Balmoral. So it's like back to back. There's one day in between.
Oh, well, you'll be getting your van down the road fairly quick, Claire.
I will indeed. I'll be selling like mad.
And you just finally, Claire, do you like going to the agricultural shows?
Oh, I love it. I love it. And you know what? I love the crack, and I love the diversity that I have, and I love the fact that I get to mix with all sorts of different people and that I get to do all sorts of different things. But I would say if it came to it, I would say probably if I had to choose between toaster bags and the hotel, I think I would probably choose toaster bags. Please God, don't ever let it come to that.
Yeah.
But I think for enjoyment's sake, the agricultural shows are such good fun and you meet so many lovely people.
Yeah.
And I like the small agricultural shows as well as the big ones. You know, I mean, it's hard to beat the buzz around the flying championship. But at the same time, you know, going to smaller shows like God, Athlone Agricultural Show is always a good one. Or you know, what's the other one? Dundalk is good. Or Clocker Valley. You know, all those smaller shows are really good fun too.
Yeah. Well, Claire, thank you very much for speaking to me today. I really appreciate it.
No problem.